Especially if Richie were here, he would appreciate whether we're on the Daf of Pei Beis, which contributes to drinking problems and things like that. But since he's not here, we should be okay. We got up to the two dots, about one third of the way down. And yesterday, you will recall that we learned about the story of the gentleman in Pumbedita. His brother was getting in trouble, wanted to make the Yavama Psula on him. And so he went ahead and promised him he'll give him half of the property. And then Rabbi Yosef said, no, you can't do that. You cannot allow to give away the property. And even if you did it, it's bottled, because whatever the Chachamim say you can't do, then it's, if you try to do it, it's not considered to be yours to do. And anyway, the poor brother ended up basically robbed of his money. And the other brother had no right, even if he, with all the goodwill in the world, had no right to give it to him, because it was all Meshuvah to the Ketuvah. He's not allowed to sell it or give it away in any way. And it turned out we had this machlokes about Abayin Rabbi Yosef, about whether that's true. Just because Rabban said he can't do it, does that mean that it wouldn't be chal? And we end up with Rabbi Yosef bringing a raya, and Abaye was dozed in a raya, and we said the Mishnah is not a Mishnah, because we don't find the Tana that's machlokes both, that the has paskins both like Rabbi Nosson, and also like Rabbi Meir, that Matatah Meshuvah to Ketuvah. That's what we were up to. The reason I review this is because it wasn't only in Pumbedita that this mitzvah happened, but a similar mitzvah happened in Mata Machasya. So what happened over here was the same exact thing. Who got the Nafala Yavama of the Mata Machasya? This man, a few years later, had a Yavama fall to Mata Machasya, another guy, and there too his kid brother wanted to passel her on him by throwing her a get. Lemitzvah get to me now. So he finds out about it, and he says to his brother, I'm like, my daitek, why do you want to do that to me? I want this girl. Imishum nifse, well, you want to split the property of our deceased brother. I'm happy to give you half of the luck. I'm happy to give you half of the person. Oh, my life, the kid brother says, ha, we already heard about that story. that phony from Pumbedita. Ha, you probably want to do the same thing that he did. So he says, well, you know, phony, I mean, no, it wasn't his fault. Rabbi Yosef says, bets in the guy afterwards at Tarot that he said, I never really meant to give it to him, and it was a phony. Just the Rabbi Yosef backed him. Others say that he just thought it was a phony, and they didn't believe it was because Rabbi Yosef thought that he had Tarot. But of course, Pumbeditoi are famous phonies. There's even sayings about them. Pumbeditoi levayatach. If a Pumbeditoi is with you on the road, shanirush bezach, you better change where you live, because he's going to manage to get in and get all your stuff. And of course, the word Pumbedita means Puma Pumbedita, phony mouth. So this is the Pumbedita Ramah. So I'm not going to put myself in the same position as that poor guy who had that phony brother that cheated him out of his money. Omar Lay said, this brother says to him, no, it's nothing like that. If that's what you're worried about, so if you like, I'll tell you what I'm going to do for you. Plog lecha mihashta. You go and be mavzik in your portion of the Yerusha right now. So even though, I mean, obviously there's no way for me to do this at this point, I don't own the money yet, because I haven't done the Yiva. But you're concerned that when I do the Yiva, I'm going to get all the money. Okay? And you're concerned that once it comes into my Yerusha, says Rabbi Yosef Paskin, I don't have the right to give it to you. Fine! Even so, make the Kenyan now, because after all, we're both heirs now. Make the Kenyan now, and then it'll be mushlam, the Kenyan, after I take it. And at the time you made the Kenyan, yet it wasn't an Isser on me, it was Tam Meshuvah. So Mamela, it'll then be yours. It'll still be Meshuvah. There's no way to take off the Sheba, but Lamaisa, it will be yours. And then after I take her in, the Kenyan will be completed. Omar Marbar of Ashi, said Marbar of Ashi, when the case came to him, Afagat, the Chiyatar of Dini Omar of Yochanan, even though we have this psak quoted by Rabbi Yochanan that, Ha'omer Lachaber Lechu Meshuv Parazo, that the Afer Shloshim Yom cannot, that the halacha is that if a person says, look, you're not going to have a chance to do the Mashiach, which is the Kenyan, on this parah for another 30 days, because you're leaving town. So I'll tell you what to do. I don't want to sell her today. I want the Kenyan to be chal in another 30 days. Meanwhile, we're still using this parah. So, but I'll tell you what we'll do. Do the Mashiach now. And then at the end of 30 days, the Kenyan will at that point be chal, even though the parah is not in your rishos, even though you're out of town. It doesn't matter. Rabbi Yochanan said that's perfectly okay. No problem with that. So you would think, therefore, that this is exactly that case. Do the Meshicha. In other words, go and do, get a chazoka, obviously not a Meshicha on property, but go take a chazoka on the property, close the door, take the key, and so on. And then after I go ahead and do the Yibum, when I'm the one that now it's Mevorah, that I'm the Yoresh, it'll be yours. No, doesn't work in this case. Why? Because it's only over there, because Hatam B'yado, over there, right now, the guy who owns the Parah could give him the Parah now. But over here, this brother doesn't own the property to give it to him now, to his kid brother. And therefore, this guy is also out of luck. He's also not going to get his money. Now, wait a minute. Getting back to what you just quoted about Rabbi Yochanan, that's unbelievable, because if that's what Ravimi quoted Rabbi Yochanan is saying, then it's the exact opposite what Ravim quoted Rabbi Yochanan is saying. He said that Rabbi Yochanan said that the Parah, in that case, if I did the Mashiach now, would not be Kanoi at the end of the 30 days. How do you explain that? Rabbi Yochanan contradicted himself? No, Kasha is no problem. How do you have a knimi akshav? How do you have a knimi akshav? It depends, you see. If you use the word, make the kinyan from now to be completed after shloshim, then yes, then it works. But if you say, make the kinyan now, and we'll transfer it to you after shloshim, then it doesn't work if it's not in his rishos.
So what's the difference of the first?
Because the truth is the Gemara has a discussion about precisely what the issue is, but what we come out with is that if you say kinyan akshav, it means that the maisa kinyan begins actually now, and that maisa is only nigmar after shloshim yom. Which, if that's the case, it makes a very big difference, because you'll notice that Rabbi Yochanan said, even if the para is in an agam. He didn't say even if the para is in Rishut HaRabim. And there's a reason for that, because if it works through the kinyan completing itself, then that means it's the act of Mashiach that we see is completing itself after 30 days. But you can't do Mashiach in Rishut HaRabim. So even though it doesn't have to be in your Rishus, but it does have to be in a place where it makes sense for you to do Mashiach. And not just that everybody there is pushing things and pulling things out of the way, in which case Mashiach has no meaning for a kinyan. Okay, now, there are other ways. For instance, it doesn't bring up. The person gives a woman kedushin. Take the money now, and the kedushin should be chalei after shloshim yom. Over there, there's no problem. But that's because the cash is still there. So that's the equivalent of being in the agam. And even if the exact cash isn't there, she'll owe him the cash if she doesn't go through with the kedushin. So over there, it's not a problem. And even if you don't say miyasha, but because the kesef that creates the kedushin is extant. But over here, the act of Mashiach is no longer extant, and he's not willing to be machna. If he says me'achshav, then he says, no, I am being machna, but the hashlama of the kinyan is after 30 days. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is not a problem. And this case, even if you don't agree with what Rabbi Yosef said yesterday, even if you hold that if the guy would have gone ahead and given away property that was meshubat to the ketuvah through his deceased brother, it would be chal, the way Abaya said. In this case, it for sure wouldn't work. Because in this case, at the time that you told the kid brother to make the kinyan, it wasn't even in your rishus yet. So it's irrelevant what you hold about Rabbi Yosef. Boming any Ula. And in fact, the same question came up to Ula. What would be the din if an older brother was miyabeim, and then he wanted to split it with his younger brother? Same kind of case. And Ula indeed said, lo asav lo klum, exactly as Rabbi Yosef had said yesterday. And another maisa came up to Ula, in which they asked, we'll see that these are actual maisa, and it wasn't that he was teaching them in the Beis HaMedrash. It wasn't a theoretical discussion, as we'll see in a moment. And another maisa came, in which he was miyabeim, which was Bechalik, like the later case over here with the brother in Mata Machasya. He split it with his kid brother and told him to be Kone it now, and then he went and it was Miyabe. What would be that in there? So Ula said, Lo asav lo klum, doesn't count. Matkivar Rav Sheshit, Rav Sheshit says, I don't understand, why would we need this latter case? Hashta yibein v'akakach chilek lo asav klum. Even when it comes to having first on the Yibam, where at least he actually owned it at the time that he went ahead and he split it, and even there we say, because of Rabbi Yosef, and the din that the Rabbanit said you're not allowed to give it away, that even b'yavad, it didn't count. So obviously, if he tries to give it away before he even got it, yibein v'akach chilek, they got to be stupid to think in that case it's going to be better. No, these weren't abstract discussions in which you could have said we had one and not the other. These were shnei ma'asim avu. These were two actual cases that came before Ula at different times. They weren't put together. The Gemara here is putting them together because they parallel the two cases, the Pumbedita case and the Mata Machasya case. That's all. Obviously, you're right. If Ula had already said that case, there would be no point in saying the other case. Omer Reish Lakish, the other Ravin, when Ravin came, he also reported from Reish Lakish. Omer Reish Lakish makes no difference. Either of these two cases won't work. Ben Yavam v'achakach chilek, you went ahead and you were miyavim, and then you split the money. Or Ben chilek v'achakach yibim, lo asav lo klum, and indeed the hilchata is lo asav lo klum. So that means that we paskin like Rav Yosef here indeed, and the Rabbanan did not empower a Yavam to sell the property because of the shmirah and the rights and security of the woman, who would be very worried, even though she really has nothing to be worried about. But remember that we started off the Masechta, especially we saw Rabbi Meir's Pesukim, that when a woman thinks that she's insecure, that the marriage is the equivalent of the Ilat Zunut, even though she may be well protected, because it's all a function of psychology, and the whole point of the Ketuvah essentially is psychology, to make a marriage more meaningful, less able to be dissolved. So here too, the Rabbanan, because, remember the important difference, because the Yavam never writes a personal Ketuvah, the woman senses that if the property of her deceased husband isn't here, she doesn't have anybody to talk to. You could talk yourself blue and tell her, but your original husband wrote you a normal ketuvah in which it says that you have a lien on all the property that he owns. What the heck are you worried about? And she'll look at you blankly and she'll say, but my current husband hasn't made any commitments to me. And if he goes out and sells his property, who am I going to talk to if I get a divorce about getting them back? And she doesn't feel that secure. And therefore, we make this chumrah to actually prevent him from selling, not just telling her it's a bad idea. We can't sell this out. Now, remember, once again, just to summarize the issues over here, theoretically, if she would agree, he could get her to say, to agree to him, say, look, how about I write you a ketubah? Like any other husband. I'll write you a new ketubah right now, and I'll put in it whatever appears in a regular ketubah. Namely, the kanoi, the kanina, whatever I own, whatever I will own. Then will you feel secure?
There's
no new ketubah now.
If
he would write a new ketubah, then everything would be fine.
Would it be 200 or 100 mana? Because she's an almana.
It would obviously be whatever she wants, because she has to agree. Right? But the point over here is that she doesn't have to agree to that. That's the point. If she would agree, then we would avoid the whole problem. He could say, listen, baby, make me hold on to $20 million worth of property, which I could be investing and doing things with, and because of your lousy $200, I can't get rid of it. Now, if you're insecure, let me write you out of ksuba. She can say, well, I sort of feel more secure with $20 million around.
So
we can't, no, that's what the Mishnah says. You can't prepay. So therefore, unless she agrees. But we cannot create a situation, as Tosis points out, we have no right to pressure her into such a thing. If, in fact, she was the fortuitous, so to speak, circumstances in which her first husband dropped dead, he could have sold everything. But now she's left in a position where she's really got this guy tied up and all this money, and she likes it. So we can't go and force her. The only thing that we can do, as we said yesterday, look, if you're really desperate, divorce her. If you divorce her, you can sell all the property, and all she's left with is her sister. So obviously there's going to end up being a natural balance here. If it's bad enough, she knows. There's a limit to how much you can push this guy into the corner. They'll just give you a divorce.
And then, but she keeps the
book. Only $200 worth for exhibit. It's just the property's just winged. It's not hers. She doesn't own a thing. That's the point that the Mishnah is making. If he's Megarasher, in the Ketuvah. Well, she's got his Ketuvah. So, of course, there's a natural balance, and there's a limit to how much she can tie him up, because he isn't really limited, but just unpleasant. If he likes her, he's going to have to divorce her and then remarry her.
And if he doesn't like her, he gets the property?
Absolutely, it's his property. All it had was a lien against her ketubah, against all his millions, that's all.
It's not his brother's, right?
It's entirely his because he did the yibum. That was the case. The kid brother didn't want to do the yibum because he wanted to split the millions. That's the case we've been talking about. Where he got promises he'll split it, and then it turns out the promise is useless. Even the kinyan that was made earlier is useless. Okay, so this is where we're at. Now, the next piece that we have in the Mishnah is the Chachomim Shita. So the Chachomim, remember, argue on Rabbi Meir in a very important point, which is that according to Rabbi Meir, even metaltling, payroll in a basket, cash, even metaltling would be shubadim for the ketubah, and therefore this guy never gets to take his...
Change of seasons.
This guy never does get a chance to take his trip to Hawaii. It's very tragic. But according to the Rabbanan, if there's cash, cash is not meshubat to the ketubah. And if there's payroll that are in a basket, they're not meshubat to the ketubah because that's just chattel. There's no lien on chattel. So, you would think that what follows is like this. If he has the payroll that are in a basket, so then the payroll that are in a basket, that's his. That's for sure, that's his. If now there were a payroll that was still connected to the property, now these are payroll that belong to his brother. This is certainly not the nitzay malug that he would get if he's marrying her, which Rabbanan said in the other Mishnah. Rabbanan said, if you're marrying somebody, there were peyrot on the trees already, those are the peyrot that you have a right to eat. Remember, that was the machlokas. Now, we carried over what it said in the previous Mishnah, and we put it into this Mishnah about Yavama. But in this Mishnah, it makes absolutely no sense. Why in the world should the peyrot of his, her nitzay malug, that her original husband would have had a right to if he had lived, suddenly become any different than anything else that he's going to inherit from his brother? Everything that he inherits from his brother is due to her ketubah, it's lien. Why would he be allowed, according to the Rabbanan, to take payroll that are on a tree and use them to finance his trip to Hawaii? And yet that's what the Mishnah says. V'chachamim omim peyrot ha-mechubarim l'karka, shalo. How could that be? V'amai. V'kol nechasav achraim v'arvaim l'ketubata. Anything that's mechubar to the karka certainly has a din of karka. It's not like the case that we had in the other Mishnah, where the person who's getting this karka is the husband, and this is what the Rabbanan say, that if there's a keren, so then she keeps the keren, and he gets the peyrot. But over here, these peyrot are basically part of the keren that he's inheriting. It makes absolutely no sense to say that he can take those peyrot. Omer Shlokesh, you are absolutely right. This is a mistake. This Mishnah, somebody pasted and copied from the previous Mishnah, but it wasn't supposed to be pasted and copied, because the last part should say Shalah, not Shalom. When it says Shalah, obviously it doesn't mean Shalah that she can put it and take her trip to Hawaii. It means Shalah that it is lean to her, and therefore he's going to have to be putting it into a new investment, and then he can eat the payroll of that investment. But meanwhile, it's for her ketubah. Kavtza harei ki ishto l'chol davar. Once he goes ahead and he does the yibam, she is now his wife across the board. What do you mean? L'mayofata. Across the board in what sense? Om Ravasi Abrabias Ribachanina, in two very important senses. A, Lo Marsha Megarsha Begate, so that he does not need Chalitza if he wants to get rid of her. Having once done Yibam, he does not require Chalitza anymore. B, that if he wants to remarry her, he can be Mazira. He can take her back again. So aren't these points obvious? I mean, Magar should get. Isn't that Pshita? I mean, why not? I thought Chalitza was an alternative to Yibam. I mean, why would I think that if he wants to divorce his Yavama, that he would have to give her Chalitza? Ah, because if you look carefully, it says in the Torah, V'yivma, it says, Ulekakala le'isha, he should take her for a wife and be miyavim her. What do you mean? What's that extra term, and be miyavim her? So I might have thought, and be miyavim her means, but of course, even though she is your wife, nonetheless, she still has the status of a Yavama, and if you want to get rid of her, you're back to where you started from, and you would need Chalitza. Maybe that's the meaning of the Yivma. Kamashmalanda, that is not the meaning of the Yivma, but actually, as we learned the Yivamot very recently, the real meaning of the Yivma is, Afilu ba'al korcha. So if the Torah is worried, if it says, L'kachalo li'isha, you might think that it's limited to the way you would take a normal woman. You can't take a normal woman without her acceptance of you as a husband. Kamashmalanda, the Yivma, that over here, it's not up to her. The Torah is being mechayev her to take you as a husband. Obviously, if it's not a good idea, then we'll do Chalitza. But in other words, we don't require her acceptance of the Jinni. And then, okay, and point B was that what? Machzira? Why not? Pshita, why not? I understand. The guy's been living with this woman for 20 years. Nobody ever raised the possibility that maybe the Torah only gave him the right to have one intercourse with her. Maybe she'll get pregnant. But who would give her the right to spend additional time with her? Nobody raised that as a problem. So now you're telling me now that he divorced her, so now suddenly she becomes an erva? What's the condition in this? I mean, Pshita, of course, why wouldn't he be able to take her back? Why can't he take her back? Any woman? Ah. Because mahu de tema, I might have thought that mitzvah the Rama Rachman Ali Avdan. Look, the guy did the mitzvah. The mitzvah was to live with her ki isha, l'kachol le'isha. Having done that mitzvah and completed that mitzvah, now he got rid of her. So now she turns back to the way she was. You did your mitzvah. The mitzvah was always that that took off the Isser Erva. The mitzvah is completed. The Isser Erva comes back. Eshazach, maybe. So I should take him alayav Isser Eshazach. Maybe it goes back now to the original Isser. Kamash malan, that it doesn't. Actually, why doesn't it? That sounds reasonable. No, because I'm not quoting lekachalo leisha. That's the point of saying leisha. Kivanche lekacha. Once he takes her, it's like any other isha, not a constant state of being doicha leisra. And therefore, nasek ishto. Both of these things therefore follow, and she is kiisha legabe get, and she's kiisha legabe gerish. Tosfos learns the problem was only with the second part, not the first part. But basically, we're all agreed that we can be happy. The only difference is that she doesn't get a separate ketubah. She gets the original ketubah. Why is that? My time. Isha hikna lo min hashamayim. This guy was given a woman min hashamayim to be his that he has to take and is standing therefore in the shoes of someone else without any mention of writing his own ketubah. However, you should know that iletla mirishon, if the first husband died, and he was penniless, and he didn't own any property, now we got a problem, because the bottom line is, once he can divorce her, this relationship is his new relationship, because she's feeling insecure. There's nothing to prevent him one day from getting moody because he didn't like the way she made his coffee, and then throwing her out. So well, how are we supposed to tolerate that? The truth is, we don't. The Rabbanan made a takana that itla misheni, that in that case, even though the ikra din is amachliyot, but to ensure shalote bilato as if it's a bilatznut, we don't want to make it easy for him to get rid of her, and Mamela, we insist that he write the ketubah. Nonetheless, lo yomar lahare ketuvatech, and so too continues the Mishnah, any man who's married to a woman, not in the case of a Yavama, should not tell his wife, here is the money for your ketubah, and I'm going to go now and not worry about this. What do you mean, v'chein? What's this v'chein? I mean, is there a difference between the two? Can't you just tell me? Just say, a man shouldn't tell his wife that here's the money for your ketubah, because it's not a good idea. I mean, what's the v'chein? Why do we need two cases? Do we need two cases? Because, I mean, you're saying that, what, it's obvious if I can't do it for Yavama, I can't do it for my wife? Not true. Exact opposite. Ma de tema. Hatam hu de lo katav la de kanoi u de kanina. In the case of a Yavama, remember that she's feeling very insecure. Why? Because she doesn't have a piece of paper. There's no legal document from her second husband that commits him to needing to pay up her ketubah from all the property. So she's worried that if he sells the property of her original husband, she's going to be left high and dry. As we said earlier, which is why we prevent her from selling. Therefore, for the same reason, she's worried with bank accounts here today, gone tomorrow, stock accounts, easy come, easy go. That's not a ketubah for me. That ketubah is my former husband's real estate holdings. That I trust. But, I mean, when it comes to a normal woman who is secure, because she does have a document that commits him that everything that he bought until now and that he's going to buy in the future is going to be for her to lean, so there may be a chinami. What's so terrible about putting money on the table and saying, look, here's the money for your ketubah, and I want you to be more secure. So, kamashman, therefore, that nonetheless it ain't a good idea, as we said earlier, that the Mishnah is giving him an Eitz HaTeva. First of all, cash has a tendency to disappear, and then she's going to come anyway and collect from your real estate, so what's the point? And besides that, as Tosis points out, it ruins the psychology of Shalotei Kalavei Navlotziyad. Remember that there's two issues here. There's first of her a sense of security that she's going to be able to get the money that's due her in the event of divorce or death. But there's also the other element of the ketuvah, which provides an important psychological need during the course of the marriage, which is that the marriage should be something not easily dissolvable. So even though you say, but I'm addressing her security, I'm making her more secure. I'm giving her money in a bank account. And she's not losing anything. If anything happens to that money, she still has her original lien. She can still come after any buyers of the property. Nonetheless, we tell them this is not a good idea, because it's going to damage the very basis of the ketuvah, as we're about to see the historical development of the ketuvah, in which indeed this was an early way of writing the ketuvah, and we ended up rejecting it, which is now what we're about to get involved in. Okay, let's first take a look at the closing words of the Mishnah. Gersha ein la el ketuvah. Now, this is very interesting, because we weren't medayik this before, but boy, does it teach us something so important that we didn't notice it until Rav Abba rammed it down our throats earlier. And that was, remember, I mean, that was the whole thing that Rav Abba said, that the only way to get the money, if you want to free up the money, give her a get, then you'll get the money, then you can take her back again. We thought that was brilliant, I mean, actually, in being a Kiddush, that, I mean, the Mishnah didn't really say anywhere that you cannot get rid of the property. It just said you shouldn't. I mean, to take such an extreme position, the only thing you're going to be able to do is give her a get, is what Rav Abba was saying. We didn't know that. Even though the Mishnah said you can't do it, it said don't do it, but it said that about every husband. And there was never a havamina that a regular husband is going to have a problem selling his property. So we took that to Barnea as a simple Eitz HaTovah. So maybe it was a simple Eitz HaTovah for the Yavam as well. Came along Rav Abba and he said, no, it's not an Eitz HaTovah. When it comes to the Yavam, it's an absolute. He's not allowed to sell. Rav Yosef took it even a step further. If he's not allowed to sell, even if he did sell, it didn't count. Fine. But now let's be medayik in the Mishnah. If it was Megarish, all she gets is her ksuvah. What is that supposed to mean? All she gets is her ksuvah. Obviously, all she gets is her ksuvah. And no woman gets more than her ksuvah. I mean, what is the meaning of Girsha and her ksuvah? Oh, it must mean that she had something else before that she doesn't have now. And what is that? A lien? No, sorry. Every woman has a lien. And nonetheless, it never occurred to anybody to say, all she gets is her ksuvah. Of course, all she gets is her ksuvah. The lien was for her ksuvah, so she gets her ksuvah. Therefore, it must be she had much more than just a lien. She had him tied up that he can't sell. So that in a sense, all the property was sitting there being controlled by her behind the scenes. Now that she's divorced, all she has is the actual ketuvah. That's the meaning. Which means that if we were medayik in the Mishnah, we would have figured out Rav Abba in the first place. But it's a good thing that he uncovered it so that we could see it.
Well, why would I think otherwise?
What do you mean?
That she would have anything other than the ketuvah.
No, I wouldn't have thought anything otherwise. But by putting it this way, it's telling us a very important message. That before, she did have something. It's the diak that's important. It's not the words per se that I know the ketuvah. But the fact is that means there must have been something more than the ketuvah she had before. So in that way, the Mishnah finally makes it very clear, you see? The whole Mishnah is now a unit in which we now understand that the two separate mentions of don't tell a Yavama, here's the money. And furthermore, the same thing is true of a wife. Don't tell a regular wife, here's the money. Then when we get to the next line in which it says, Girsha in la ketuvah, we say, oh, wait a minute. Now that shows us that when it said earlier, don't say to a Yavama, and also don't say to a wife, the don't say to a Yavama is very different than the don't say to a wife. Because the don't say to a Yavama means you're trying to say this in order to sell the property. And you can't do that. Much anything by the wife, that you can sell the property. So there it's only an Eitz HaTovah, not a straight out halacha. So the Mishnah, basically, once we learn to see the meaning of every word in it, now has clarified itself and has turned into one very, very clear and understandable unit. It was a very complex Mishnah originally that had all types of different ideas. And now, basically, we're able to sum up the Mishnah so that it turns out to be very straightforward. And let's just review the elements in the Mishnah again so that we get it completely straight. We start off with four different issues that we need to establish about the woman and the monetary relationships with her husband. We have what is known as the ketuvah, the ikar ketuvah. The ikar ketuvah is either 200 for a betula or 100 for an almana. We also have a tosefet ketuvah, which is something that is personal between any particular zug. They can decide how much he wants to add to show how valuable she is to him. We furthermore have two different sets of property types that she would be bringing into a marriage. One is called nechzei tzon barzel, per nedunya. That nedunya is brought to an assessor at the time that they're writing up the ketuvah. The assessor gives a certain value. That value is assumed in a Beit Chatanut to be a little inflated, and it's all part of the idea that the chassam is also inflates the value and he writes that it's worth more than it really is. And he's mitchayev, all of these things we saw earlier. And the meaning of that nechassam, the reason it's called the chetzon barza, it is metal sheep. Why is it metal sheep? Because it means that she's always going to get it back as if it's solid gold. Meaning that he is guaranteeing, in absolute terms, its current value.
It's index linked.
Exactly. But he himself now takes these sheep, and basically, they're obviously abstract sheep. If they're made out of metal, they're not robots. So that means that he can use them, do whatever he wants. He used them up, they're no longer extant, but nonetheless, the absolute value remains.
He can
do whatever he wants with them. They're his, but he's responsible for their value. That's because all written up in the Ketubah. Masha'in, then the other type, the fourth issue that comes into a marriage, is nifsei melug. Melug means plucking property. Plucking property is because it's really completely hers. The only thing is, he can pluck it. That is to say, if it's growing fruit, he plucks the fruit. If it's chickens, he plucks the eggs. He plucks the feathers. And so on and so forth. But it's hers. And therefore, that's good for her and bad for her. It's good for her in the sense that he's got no right to make any determination of the actual dispensation of the property. He can't sell it, can't do anything with it. But it's bad for her in the sense that if anything goes wrong, he isn't left holding the bag, he isn't guaranteeing any value in it, and therefore it's really hers, and he has certain rights to peirot, and as we saw earlier, they're not normal rights to peirot. They can't, the question whether they can be sold, or whether kinyan peirot, it's entirely different. And even peirot of peirot he doesn't have, unless it's part of the standard development of these things. It's only a right for usage. It's not a normal financial right in her property. Those are the four types of things.
Some Barzel also gives a lien on his property.
Yes, Nifsei Tzon Barzel gives the same lien that the Ikar HaKetuvah gives. She can collect it from anything that he ever bought that is real estate. And nowadays, even from a tattoo, it also is a lien. So if it was worth $100 million, she has a lien for $100 million plus $200 for Ikar HaKetuvah plus whatever else was the Tosefet of the Ketuvah. But she has no liens on for Nifsei Melud whatsoever.
She can take property that was sold while the husband was
absolutely. If, I mean, obviously going in order of sale. First sale, last taken back.
Is there an obligation on another property to maintain it?
On the which type of property? Metal sheep?
Yeah.
No.
You're on the other problem.
Yes, that was one of the reasons that we do it. We want it well maintained. And that's why we don't allow him to give it to somebody else, because that somebody else won't well maintain, even though that other person is only taking payroll. So remember, that was a
failure to maintain it with the
back. Yeah. I'm trying to summarize. It's not a good idea now for us to go off on tangents. So we have four types of properties. Now, the Mishnah comes to determine what is the status of those four properties for a normal woman, the case of a normal woman, the human that I have, and in the case of a Shomeret Yavan. So first, the perek opens up with a question of what the status is of incoming properties that she gets before she ever met him, after the kedushin, after the nisuin. And it defines the differences between those situations. And we had a machlokas, and we had Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. In certain cases, it's not right morally for her to sell, but if she does sell, it's a good sell. In other cases, where it felt her after the nisuin, it's definitely not a good sell because the Chachomim wanted the husband to have rights to the peirot of it, and so on. When it came to the Shomeret Yavan, over there it was different, because the Shomeret Yavan may never end up being married, even meant to be married. If it turns out the chalitza is always an option. When it comes to a regular marriage, it's only an option to undo the marriage. It's not meant to be undone. I don't fall to him to get a get. I mean, the normal derech would be that I would go to the chuppah, which is why we're machmer over there and say, don't sell. But when it comes to Shomeret Yavan, what do we say? The norm is necessarily to do Yibum. The norm is either to do Yibum or Chalitza. So therefore, she is in less of a position of thinking that her husband is meant, or her Yavam to be, her husband to be, is meant to control her property. And that accounts for the differences in halacha between incoming property. Then we had the issues of Ketuvah. And there were two very important issues that Ketuvah comes to address. One, Shalote Kala Be'inav Lahotziyah. We need to establish that it should be difficult for a man to divorce his wife, because that way the marriage is more stable. And stability and context is the essence of marriage as opposed to simple znut. We want to encourage the nature of dedicated marriage. And then the other issue is that we want her to feel secure in the marriage so that she should not feel that she's unprotected and that her property won't be recovered and the money that he promised her she's actually going to be able to get. And if he dies, she's not going to be sitting there chasing his heirs in court for money for her to live on and so on. So therefore, we write out the ketuvah, we make all these tana'i beidin in order to provide her with the means to feel secure. Here, too, we have a very important difference between the normal woman who is married and a yavama who is married. The differences are crucial because the yavama does not have a ketuvah from the yavam. That's viewed as a relationship that is enforced. It's enforced. It's not something that we can be Mekhayev right at Ketuvah. It's like, listen, guys, I mean, I got caught up with this thing. I have no interest in this woman. The Torah is throwing me this woman. I'm ready to do a mitzvah. So leave me off, Ketuvah. What Ketuvah this? So indeed, the halacha over there is he doesn't need to write a Ketuvah. Of course, she still needs a Ketuvah. But that Ketuvah is hers still from the original husband. Because of that, all types of distortions now enter into the relationship. Because normally, when a woman has a relationship with a particular man, and that man wrote her out a Ketuvah, and in this Ketuvah makes very specific commitments to her about her being able to collect from all of his property, and he gives her a lien on everything, she feels secure. And she cannot limit him and say, don't sell that. What am I going to get? If you die, where am I going to get my money? See, here, look at these lines. Everything that I buy or will buy, if I sell it, you have a lien on it, we'll be able to collect it, go to court, and they'll give it right back to you. You won't have any problem. Okay, so she's happy. But when it comes to a yavam, she's going to say, you can't sell that property. That's my husband's property. It's meant to be mine. If you get rid of that, I can't come after you. You didn't give me any instrument that makes your property mechuyav to me. So there, it doesn't help to show her, but it won't matter, because you could always collect it from your original husband. My original husband, he's dead. What are you talking about? So therefore, she's insecure. To ensure her security, which is all psychological, Chazal said in that case, because she's limited to a lien on her first husband, you are not allowed to sell her things. And therefore, what's going to happen is if you want to actually take possession of it as a yavam, you're going to have to divorce her. If you like her, divorce her and take her back. Or you can always get her acceptance of writing her your own tshuva, and then she will feel secure. But you can't force her to do that, because she can always say, I like the idea of controlling all of these millions. Now, obviously, as we said, we're generating a situation that has a built-in balance, because if there's a lot of money that she's controlling, then obviously there's a lot of pressure that's building for him to divorce her and get control of the money. And so she's going to understand that there's a point at which she has to give in, and that has a natural balance. We're not really cheating anybody out of anything or hurting anybody in the end. They're going to learn to get along and figure out what to do with the property. We're just talking over here about the abstractions, the legal abstractions. The psychological realities are built into the situation. He doesn't owe her a thing if he has his own property. Nothing. Right. Furthermore, in all cases, we also have a machlokas between, a very important machlokas here in the Mishnah, between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that the lien of a ketuvah is against everything, not only against real estate. It's against all his bank accounts, it's against any chattel that he has, and therefore, by extension, in the case of the Yavam, if the Yavam inherits any of those things from his brother, he can't use them. Because since the ketuvah is leaned on the chattel and bank accounts, these bank accounts are now sealed by the court because they're meant to give her security. And he has no right to do anything with the money. Masha Inkin, according to the Chachamim, since it's not leaned, so then if he inherits it from the brother, fine. Inherits it from the brother, he could take it. Unless, of course, she had been tofesit, that's something else. If she had been tofesit already to collect from during the lifetime of her husband, so then Enochinami, maybe we would have to buy property, as we said in the Mishnah, and invest it, and then that would be further security for her. So these were the cases that we had in the Mishnah, the difference in halacha between a person who sells as a yavam, a person who sells as a baal, other submachloikas which are indicated in the Mishnah, elayla ketuvah, that even if I had sold, the only way that I can get it is by giving her divorce, that's clear, elayla ketuvah, and Rabbi Yosef said, but it also means worse than that, it means even if you had sold, it wouldn't have helped. Because you can't sell. Now, that's basically all that we learned. Yes,
how do we hold on pre-Avamo's dispositions to like a brother? Or can the brother, of course, do Chalitza and then force
Which brother? The deceased brother?
No, the other brothers who see all this money that the older brother
right.
can take, they want to get a piece of it. So
right.
either they do Chalitza, which then means it will be distributed to all of them.
Right.
Or they make a deal.
Yeah, but the problem is we had two cases where people attempted to make deals and the court canceled the deal.
And his ability to do Chalitza, the younger brother, he can speak of
He can mess up the older brother very easily by throwing her a get. Because since the Rabbanan ossered Yibam in cases where one of the brothers gave a get to the Yavama, so now it's easy to pressure an older brother by making it impossible for him to do either.
He can't pressure because he can't make a deal with
him. He can't make a deal, that's true. But what he could do is he could buy you out. In other words, if he has money himself, then he can easily buy you out. He says, look, you know what, I'm going to get the money, but I have enough money to cover half of that. I'll give you cash right now. So you could certainly do that.
What's the difference between the younger brother giving a get or a chalitza?
There isn't any, except that the Bezdin is not going to accept his chalitza when there's an older brother who wants to leave him.
But they will accept his get.
No, but they don't have to accept his get. He throws it at her, and then he goes, That's a get can be given by a korchan, like by any woman, so then he messes it up. That's why this guy's desperate. He can't go to court and say, don't let him give a get. It's not a dozen. He throws a get to her, what are we going to do about it? So that's why he's trying to make a deal, basically. Here's Zira, what's the chiddush? That she should be different? Micah Mashmah, I mean, it says the first later on in Mishnah. Amagarish by Isham Havzira, it's always Amadat Kuvah Rishon Havzira, that's true of any woman. Yes, but Ma'al Tema Ishto, who the Yukatav Lak Tuvaminei, his own wife, or he had written the original Ktuvah, so that is on the original Ktuvah. But for the Yavama, he had never written a Ktuvah. Now that he's remarrying her, it's his marriage now. It's not the marriage that he was taking over from his brother. And therefore, the Yavama, Delo Yukatav La, he never wrote her a Ktuvah. Over there, I would think, hey, for the Garsha Bahadra, that in certainly Ema Ktuvah Taminei, I mean, there the God says that he should write his own Ktuvah. Kamash Malon, that even the Yavama, that your Mazir is indeed meant to go back to the original arrangement. We see a Chazora as being a continuation of the first marriage, basically. He can write her a new ketuvah. What he could say is, look, baby, I ain't marrying you again on the basis of that crazy ketuvah where you had me wrapped up. I'm going to marry you, but we're going to agree that I write you a ketuvah, and that means that I can do whatever I want with the property. So therefore, he doesn't really have to sell the property in the previous case, according to Rabbi Abba, where he wants to gain control by giving her a get. By giving her a get, he puts her into a position where she's going to have to accept a normal ketuvah. And then once it's a normal ketuvah that says the kanoi v'de kanina, so then enochinami, she cannot prevent him from selling.
If he paid off, he divorced and he paid off the ketuvah, then he has to give
it. Yes.
Then he has to give
it. Yes, for sure.
And it's a normal ketuvah.
Yes, we're talking about what he did. Now we're going to go into a very interesting discussion of... yes. So we're going to get into a very interesting discussion about the historical development of the ketuvah. What we used to do, we'd write a ketuvah for matayim and set aside the money on the spot. And we would say, look, this is your money in the event of a divorce, or for an almana, almana. You know what happened? These guys grew old and white and never had any wives because they ran away just like the ants. No woman wants to marry a guy where her ketuvah is 200 mana that she is not controlling. Because she figures he's going to die, his heirs are going to run into the house, grab everything and put it somewhere, and she's going to say, where's the bank accounts, where's my money? What money? Who money? And she's going to be basically left, he says, what do I get? What do I need this for? I'm going to end up with an old age that the guy used up all my kaychas and I have nothing for it.
So who are the ones getting married?
The women refused to marry men, so they ended up not marrying. Why you maskinim lo yonasim nashim? Came along Shimon ben Shetach, and among the other wonderful things that he was mitaken, Ad Sheba Shimon ben Shetach, v'tikein kol nechasav achra'in neketuvata, he made this takona to make anything that the guy owns achra'in for the ketuvah. But there was more to this history. Tani nami hafi. V'rishona yukotvin abtulal matayim ulal mana mana v'yu maskinim v'lo yu nosim nashim. So what did they do before Shimon ben Shetach? Hitkinu sheyum menichinota bebet aviyah. So what they did was, okay, you know what? Here's the money. You let your family keep this money, so that when I die, nobody's going to be able to get into their house and steal your money. So then you're going to be secure. But then they weren't addressing very much of the problem of Shalote Kalav Einav Lotziyah, because he figures, you know what? Go back home. All right, go back home. It's already, I don't have any use for this money anyway. I mean, so then he tkinu shumenichimota bebeit chamiya. So what they did then was they said, okay, let her now put it into the husband's family's possession and make something of it that is constantly exposed and used so that it can't just be hidden and you lose track of where it is like a bank book. Instead, ashiroto sotota kalatocho keser, so rich women who have a lot of money in the ketuvah, or others learn, rich women who are used to using rich talim, and that kli will be constantly used. So they make like silver baskets for serving food on, or golden baskets for serving fruit on. Aniyot, what is a poor woman going to do? She'll make a beautiful silver chamber pot. You know? So that's something that they're not going to be able to hide. She's going to make sure that she's got that chamber pot. Or, you know, in those days too, the one thing you splurge on is the bathroom. So they were osotot avicho mei raglayim. Actually, the Gemara clearly did not have a girsa avicho mei raglayim. The Gemara's girsa was avit. Rashi assumes that an avit means a chamber pot, not just a pot. But other Rishonim say this is ridiculous. Who uses a solid gold or silver chamber pot? And Tosfos says the avit over here just means that we find the word avit used as a fruit platter also. So, I mean, who's to say it's avit shomei meraglayim? But Rashi takes for granted it's avit shomei meraglayim for a very simple reason. Since the whole point is that as an aniyah, she normally wouldn't be using expensive talim, we have to make it something that she's going to be constantly using. And that's only a chamber pot. Because the whole point was that it should be accessible to her, and she should know if it disappeared and set up a fuss before her husband dies.
This was probably that's waiting for her
if he would divorce.
That's still easy, though.
And it was another takana, because since it's available, you see, so he figures, okay, when I'm really desperate, we need money or something, I can borrow money from her, I can take to a pawn shop or whatever, and at least we'll have the money in desperation. So it's not quite as easy as him saying, just go back to your family. So for a year, first of all, it's not her family, it's his family. There's already going to be some nastiness involved. She's going to have to be tovea. He's sending her out of the house. She's going to be calling a lawyer to get back the stuff that's there. It's not going to be so pushed anymore. Nonetheless, as the Gemara Adayin, but it was still Jishiko Esalam, when he's good and angry, he figures the money's already set aside. Well, how much benefit do I have of it? How often am I going to take it to a pawn shop? The heck with it. Leave to the day and say, take your money and get the heck out of my wife. Achiba Shimon ben Shetach v'tikein, shiakotevla, kol nefasai akra'in l'ktuvatech, and there already there's hell to be paid. If he divorces her, he's going to be tied up, God only knows. And the buyers are going to be suing him. It's going to be coming down on his head.
The divorce lawyer is going to get a big flake over.
He's got to be really darn sure that he wants to divorce her. By the time he thinks it over, it'll have cooled down. And at that point, he probably won't divorce her. That's not what they're trying to say. The important thing over here is to buy time. Very interesting. It's not that the thing itself is going to discourage you. I mean, ultimately, if you want to get rid of her, you'll get rid of her. But it buys time. That's why he keeps talking about koi salah. This explains the difference that we'll see in Gittin, why we have a special kind of get for Kohanim, which is so difficult to make that by the time the get arrives from the Sofer, he's cooled down. So the idea over here, generally, a marriage is dissolved not in cold blood, but in heat. And in order to avoid the heat, we create psychological advantages in biding your time. And by that time, the heat's not here. If a man agrees and writes up front to a woman, I remove all of the rights that were meant to be given to me to your property, what happens? To be seen excitingly tomorrow.